Hey, you are listening to The Workplace Theatre. This is the podcast where we go behind the scenes of corporate real estate, talking to industry experts about how they shape the next generation workplace. I'm your host, Sabine M., and in today's episode, I'm speaking with Liz Burrow. Liz is a leader in workplace strategy and design research and was the vice president of workplace strategy at WeWork. Hi everyone, I'm today with Liz Burrow and I'm really excited that I get to talk to her. I actually came across her profile at a work tech event last year and was really taken with a blog series she put out that's called Serendipity in Quarantine. So that's why I reached out and invited her to join me today. Well, for everyone who has not seen you on LinkedIn, stalked your profile like I did, would you care to explain a bit what you do and maybe what your professional background is as well?
Sure. Hi, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I'm a leader in workplace strategy and design research. I bring research insights into design and align space, culture, and brand on behalf of corporate clients. So I've worked with Fortune 100 companies as well as fast-growing startups spanning tech, finance, media, and creative sectors. So I've done it all. I would say my specialty is I build business cases for workplace transformation. I conduct the research and facilitate a co-creative process on behalf of end users. I build tools that specifically help benchmark and space budget to inform future designs. I track emerging trends and bring the voice of the customer insights to inform new workplace products, not just designs. And I would say my secret superpower is visual thinking. So if you're talking it, I'm likely drawing it. My background is I studied architecture and I've worked in architecture firms, I'd say for the first 10 years of my profession. The next 10 years was recreating myself as a design strategist. I found what I was really passionate about was the front end of design processes and working directly with clients to inform the vision of the design more so than actually executing on the design. And I'm headed into my next 10 years of the profession. So I think really what I want to bring to the table is taking what I know and productizing it so it doesn't have to live in the knowledge I have doesn't have to live in the brains of a few, but it actually can be scaled to the many. And I'm coming from, I think, as you mentioned, I was the VP of workplace strategy at WeWork, where I was doing all this kind of work on behalf of enterprise clients, taking the WeWork product and bringing it to scale for large companies who were leveraging WeWork in their portfolio. And also working on product innovation. So doing the research and saying, how might we evolve a certain sector or a certain part of our product to better suit the needs of enterprise client priorities?
That's so cool. I actually can't wait to get into more details for that. But before we kick it off, allow me this question. When was the last time you've actually been to an office? And going with that, is there something that you miss of the workplace experience and being in an office?
Yeah. I was in an office this weekend. It happens to be my sister's office. She's building a new space for herself. She just moved. We both moved back to Minnesota from living on both coasts. She was on the West Coast and I was on the East Coast. So she's setting up an office and wanted my help. So it was really fun to walk through the space with her and help guide her in decision making. I kept on saying, I'm not here to tell you what I think about design, but I'm here to help you help you make choices about how the space should be used or what we could do with this space versus that. And that was really fun because through that conversation, got her to see some of her spaces a bit differently, different kinds of uses, and imagine how it can really be a place to build relationships and community within her own ecosystem of work. And it was just fun to hang out with my sister. So that's the last time.
besides your sister then, who are typically nowadays your stakeholders and who do you collaborate with?
Yeah, right now I'm working independently. So my stakeholders are corporate real estate teams, and more specifically within that, the workplace solutions or workplace services teams. You know, because real estate is often thinking about the site and the market and the building, and the workplace team is thinking about the floor and the design and the use of the specific space. So that's who I'm working directly with. I also work with architects, partner with them on the solutions, so helping bring the strategy all the way through to execution. I'm also working with some product development companies on new ideas and new tools for the workplace. So again, really trying to quantify and systematize the workplace as an offering. And I would say my biggest stakeholder is the person who comes in and uses the workplace, so the employee of the workplace experience, and really extending that out to visitor experiences. So how to make sure that the experience we have is very hospitable and equitable and just really a really nice place to come to. So that's who I'm always trying to think about, is the everyday user.
Which is actually an important point, I think, because for corporate real estate, from my experience, there's typically a lot of chefs around the table having opinions about it. But sometimes you lose sight of that. The office, yes, it's a production resource for a company, but in the end, it needs to be suited to the employees there as well. Would you say that you have, or where do you think you have a different perception than someone that is within a CRE organization?
Yeah, I think one unique feature of me is that I've talked with many clients across the industry. So a corporate real estate team and the individuals in that team may be deeply within an organization for a lot of their career. I have a generalist expansion across projects, across clients, across industries. So I can bring a different industry to your table. I can bring a different client's perspective or collective voice, you know, a trend of everyone is actually has this pain point, or everyone's asking the same question, or this is a trend I'm seeing. So I think that's quite valuable, like having that collective breadth of knowledge and experience and voice of the customer. It complements really well the deep knowledge someone has about their own company and their own work culture within an organization. I also come with a very strategic naivete. So, you know, what I can offer is a curious mind and an open mind who says, well, what if we did this? How might we change things? And not steeped in that failed in the past, or we didn't get buy-in in the past there. And really just a fresh voice saying, how about we try it differently? Have you ever considered this? And sometimes that breath of fresh air is I don't realize it until someone mentions it, but it's quite nice to have in the room. As long as I don't seem like, you know, Pollyannic about it, and I have my feet rooted in reality, but I'm also able to say, hey, why don't we put on a different lens, or take a look at this problem in a slightly different way? And that can help open people's minds up.
Makes total sense. As long as you don't come in as the tornado.
And
do you think there is typical biggest challenges you are facing in these kind of conversations or in your projects?
I would say corporate real estate is pretty risk adverse and wants a lot of data to back up any decision, which I completely understand. And I'm all about evidence and data to inform decision making. But I think there becomes like you said, a lot of chefs in the kitchen. There is, I think, a bit of a thing that happens where everyone settles on the middle and the safe idea, or the incremental change, not the revolutionary change, or a really new innovative idea, and kind of taking a step like, yes, we have the data, but there's a little bit of hypothesis and something that we can't prove until we test it or we try it. And taking that leap of faith, I think, is really hard for the corporate real estate as a community and a culture to do. And they're always looking around, what is everyone else doing? okay, we're either going to lean into that or we're going to say, no, we're going to do it our way. But it just feels generally safe. And so it's really exciting to see someone go completely different, like a different angle. And that's the challenge, is to listen to pain points, to look at trends all over different kinds of industries and bring what we think are innovative ideas to the table and then have them kind of shaved off so that they end up being very normal or typical, or just saying, no, we're, you know, that we just don't think that's possible here. So I get it, but it's a challenge, because I think we're all just kind of slowly evolving, and it's hard to see someone like take a rocket to the moon. But there are some organizations that do that, and they're really interesting to look at and study.
And I think slowly others will follow. I mean, with recent events, most companies have exposure now to remote work. So we're kind of starting all at the same point now. We have the same experience. Companies have tested in the same circumstances and get the same learnings in a way. I remember in our first conversation, we talked about building a business case for change, which you a little bit touched upon in this previous comment as well. And something I've also noted was you need to have data, but you need to be able to make sense of data as well. So it doesn't help to create a heap of data, because actually nobody's going to listen to it. You will have, or will read through it. You have to find the right data points to build that business case. But the data itself, again, is not enough. You will have to have the interpretation around it to make sense of it. And I guess that's where you would come in as well as a consultant and say, look, with a different angle, this is what I've seen also at other clients. So I think that can be very helpful to the industry.
Absolutely. I mean, there's been a lot of writing and thinking around, people love to talk about the need for data, but in the end, we love stories and we love narratives. And I think part of it is just translating the research and the insight into a narrative that the decision makers can wrap their heads around and get excited about. And I think sometimes it just takes a little bit of maybe skirting around decision makers, being a little bit of a maverick and saying, well, we're going to quietly test something over here that no one's paying attention to, and actually try out a radical new idea. And proof is in the pudding, I think. So once it's actually been done, then people can see it and touch it and feel it. It's similar to words versus drawings. You know, that's why I'm always drawing pictures, is because people are always trying to continue to refine an idea through words. And I'm like, I think if we draw this out, we'll all agree on the drawing more so than the language. So I think being able to test out a new idea is easier than hypothesizing around it. But of course, right now, like you said, it's what's really great is we've wiped the slate clean. We're all on the same page. We've actually realized we can do a lot more than we thought we could in terms of making decisions, getting employees into a new way of working. And so this is like this fertile ground for now, if we add pieces back onto the playing board, what are we going to add in? And, you know, what is our bet on why people are going to return to the workplace? It's really hard because we can't pilot new ideas because no one's around. So I'm working with organizations that are trying to figure out, how do we test new ideas? How do we get proof in the pudding without like the ability to have people kick the tires? I think there's workarounds, and I'm happy to share some thoughts, but that's just one thing. That's a pain point I see right now. We're yeah. In 2021, we're in this kind of limbo where we want to move forward with plans and reopening and ideas. We want the workplace to be different, than people to come back to a different experience, one that we think is more in tune with a work from anywhere approach. But we literally can't test the ideas out until it's safe to come back. And that's a real struggle for corporate real estate teams who are very much into data-driven or even narratives that say, like, this is what we should be doing.
pretty much assumptions at this point, right? That you can get the tools in place to build the storytelling once you are able to pilot. But for the time being, I guess it's kind of a waiting game to some extent. But still, I guess the stories are being put into place, the narrative around it. Are there specific business initiatives that you see driving the real estate strategy nowadays?
I think there's really two big ones. The first is, are we investing in building the right stuff? So a balance of supply and demand, are people showing up at the rate and using the space at a satisfactory level where we feel like it was a really good investment, you know, or do we feel like space is sitting unused? And I'm speaking generally, not today, capital expense versus operational expense and the snapshot of the full-time employee, you know, the biggest expense of the workplace is HR and people's salaries. And then second is real estate. So we want to make sure, are people happy? Are they loyal? Or are they doing their best work? And then are they doing a place that they love? So it's sort of, did we invest in the right stuff? And then how did it help our business thrive? And I would say the initiative that's driving that is, are we improving connection and collaboration? Are we increasing employee satisfaction? And are we, I mean, this is the hard one, is the attendance. Are the right people coming together in the right moments and doing great work? We know working from home is really good for individual productivity. The hypothesis and the bet is when people return to work, more likely, given a choice, they're going to come in to do teamwork and group work and strengthen the bonds within a team or bridge from team to team and strengthen social capital within an organization. And they can continue to work individually at home and say, I've got to write something, I've got to do something, I'm going to spend this day at home and get that individual work done. So I think helping our business thrive is going to be, is the workplace providing a satisfactory and a productive and a delightful experience for employees as they return to work? And we need to measure that. I've been thinking a lot about the quantified workplace, and I'm not sure if that's an old idea or a new idea, but it's on my mind.
It's an idea that's transforming through time, I'm thinking, because the big question which remains is, how do you determine space demand? I think that's been around for ages, and there have been benchmarks out as to how many square meters or square foot per desk, per employee, and so on. And now it's shaken up completely. And then there's the two theories, actually, the one saying, oh, probably you will need more space because of distancing that you will make to, or you will have to ensure. And then on the other hand, there's people saying, but people will come less to the office, so you actually need less space. Do you think there is any way to establish how much space a company will need in the future? Or what ways would you go about that question currently?
I would say, you know, I've thought about the idea of density and talked about it with clients for many, many years. It all got shook up when I went to WeWork, because the concept of density and how much space and, you know, the size of the desk and the size of space was just a total rethinking of needs. But even there, everyone talked about, you know, it's all these like very small spaces. But in the end, it was a very generous amount of space, because we looked at both allocated space assignment by desk or by person versus experience density, which is who shows up and what is their experience of space. So you can have a membership load of a lot of people to a site, but similar to a gym, you know, you might have peaks and valleys, and it's really just how many people are there. And so we started to think about it as a spectrum of, there's such a thing as having too much space and it feels really dead. And there's something where you don't have enough space and people start opting out because it's too crowded. So you want to find that sweet spot in the middle that's right for a work culture or a regional culture. So different regions around the world, different markets have different acceptance of proximity and people space. I think post-pandemic, we probably will go back to our pre-pandemic norms or habits around distancing. I mean, I don't have any scientific evidence on that, but that's just a hunch. But I do think organizations are saying, you know, a lot of people are thinking, I don't think we need assigned environments anymore. We don't need assigned desks. So we're in a free address or unassigned desk or activity-based work. And of course, then you have to be much more sophisticated about supply and demand, because you're looking at what the population you load into a site versus who actually shows up. And that's about, like, I think a lot in terms of retail environments, you're trying to pull people in, you're trying to incentivize them to come in with the cool stuff you have. You're not making people shop there every day, right? So we have to think the same way in workplace, like, what is the cool feature of the space or the cool offering that we're pulling people in, and making sure that they're using all the kinds of offerings, you know, and spaces and equipment we have, versus saying, like, you have to show up 5 days, whether or not you like it or you don't. And so how you monitor that and how you manage supply and demand, I think, will be through more sophisticated sensor platforms, booking platforms, and integrating those with HR platforms like satisfaction surveys and metadata, where you're looking at virtual space and social capital networks and trying to triangulate all that information. The other dimension is, I think, you have to be really careful about utilization, and that people will go and use a space. They don't necessarily like it. Like, people have to go to the bathroom, but they don't necessarily like the restroom design. So we have to really, like, be clear about those two things, and make sure that we're not looking at just one set of data if we're trying to really make the best experience.
Absolutely. I totally underwrite that. At the same time, I'm thinking, as long as you don't have that one tool to cover it all, it absolutely makes sense to look at the data sets that are already available in the company and how you can exploit these, and then maybe have someone to marry that data still manually. And also, I feel the narrative around it, what we've mentioned before, kind of comes from context, right? From knowing the location, from knowing the business that's on the ground. That's something that the pure numbers will not really tell you.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it's incremental change, is looking at data and then adjusting your furniture kit of parts or your AVIT package based on the data. Sometimes revolutionary design is taking a chance. So I think there's still ways to kind of take those leaps of faith. And organizations, I do think, have to adopt a bit of that mindset right now, because testing is limited. Now is a chance to be bold, because we're all at the starting lines together. No one has an advantage over anyone else on what, you know, getting back to work first. And I think the sentiment is, well, now is a time to do something differently, you know, and try new ideas as we return to work. So I think it's going to be in a really exciting year. I think people will feel pretty frustrated in the beginning. And then towards the end of the year, my understanding is people are kind of thinking about September, October as possible dates to have 50% or more people return to work, that we'll be able to see and hear about some of these ideas people have been talking about for the last, you know, 6 to 9 months.
Yeah, I think it's actually a big opportunity for corporate real estate, because people are currently, or say many of them, are hungry or thirsty for the office experience again. So whatever you provide them, it's probably going to be exciting to them, because it's not their home setting and they get to meet people again. So you can really use that to your advantage.
Yeah.
Now, what I remember seeing on your blog as well was this quadrant where you put different purposes offices need to serve or experiences it's going to provide or should provide. So from your point of view, what will the future workplace environment look like, or which scenarios do you see?
In my writing, what I was taking a guess on or dreaming about was two scenarios. One was the workplace clubhouse. And to be more specific about what we were just talking about, people miss people the most. I think generally people are feeling productive at home. And I, that's a general statement, because a lot of people aren't, and they don't have the right environment, or they don't have the right technology. So I think when people return to work, it's going to be mostly about connecting with others and building relationships, building community, connecting to the bigger vision, and not feeling so isolated. So in the Clubhouse scenario, it's really about connecting to the mission and connecting to your team and your social network. This quadrant also, I think just for listeners, if you imagine a vertical line, so in a spectrum, so, and it goes from formal, and the bottom is informal, and then across the middle, a horizontal line is, it's for the organization or it's for the employee. So in these different quadrants, you'd have, it's for the organization and it's formal would be, we want to conduct business. We want to do the business development. We want to do, that would be like conferences and summits and town halls and big important meetings, big deals. It's formal and for the employee is learning something, employee onboarding, leadership training, skill building. And then in the lower quadrants for organizations, and it's informal is like connecting to the mission. So volunteering, access to leadership, hearing about, you know, business reporting in a more informal way. And then it's informal and for the employees, like all those like team celebrations, happy hours, all quadrants can fire, you know, in the future workplace. But I think it's interesting to see and ask organizations, which quadrant do you want to focus on and emphasize for the future workplace experience? Because you don't have to do all four all the time. Some can be now done in virtual space, and some you can't recreate as well in virtual, and it's better to do in physical, like the informal for the employee experiences. So I think that's one. The other was for a very remote forward company, they may say, we're able to do all of this remotely, but I still think there is an opportunity to get together occasionally physically. And I equate that to the idea of an online MBA degree. The secret of those degrees is you still meet in person when you start the degree. So you onboard together physically for a week or two, and then you go off remotely and do your MBA and work on teams remotely. So it's similar to a remote first organization. Yes, every day you'll be working remotely, but there's still probably need to come together for moments. And I think that might not be a workplace that you own every day of the year, but there are facilities, you know, and products that were and maybe will revise themselves to really be about that event hosting and summit hosting, or those clubhouses just to come together to make important decisions, to have certain learning moments, to be in person. So it's a very small footprint for the organization, but they have something. But the world of workplace will continue to be many different iterations of a kit of parts. People are always like, what's going to happen? Tell me exactly what's going to happen with everyone. And I say, that's an impossible question to answer because every culture is unique. Everyone's going to take a slightly different approach. And that's fine as long as we understand we're trying to move the needle forward.
Absolutely. I mean, there's cultural differences, as you mentioned, and we've seen that before. We know that in Asia, the acceptance of density has traditionally been higher than in other cultures, and it was fine. And when we have markets that adopted flexible workplace models quicker or earlier than others, and that's fine for most companies as well. So I'm assuming there will be differences between industries as well as to what they go for.
Yeah, and similar to the past, different industries have different expectations. Of course, the legal industry is on like one end of the spectrum, and consultancies are on the other end of the spectrum. And then I think there is kind of a middle ground of people say, well, what's the tech industry doing? I'm like, well, everyone's a tech company at this point. Everyone has a tech division. So there's a middle ground. And again, it depends on really your attitude towards work and the employee. And now I think this attitude towards work from anywhere versus work agreements where we're asking people to come in. A lot of companies show up in a very similar way. And so it's really these behavioral norms that you apply on top of it or agreements that you apply on top. Are we going to allow people to come in whenever they want?
Are we going to have assigned, unassigned seating? Are we going to have everyone work the same? Or are we going to tune it to different kinds of teams where the developers work different than the marketing or creative teams? And those decisions then waterfall out the kind of solutions that you offer, and as well as the change management that you have to work with within an organization to help them understand shared resources versus individual needs.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, we're a tech company as well, and I think I haven't seen a developer since summer. So I've been to the office quite a lot. But I mean, it's fine. It's the nature of their work. That's how they work best, focused with their screens that they need. So yeah, that's something that you have to take into regard. And something that you mentioned that's quite important is the change management bit, right? I mean, yes, we're all here now at the same point to this kickstart, but once you allow return to work and go that bold step of doing something different, there still will have to happen a process around this change management, really enabling and empowering employees to make choices. So the question for me there would be, how do you handle that change management process?
Can I just back up for a second on developers? Because I think, again, to this idea of trying to listen to the voice of the user and make sure their needs are met and they have certain priorities and preferences and, you know, different work styles, that's one bucket. The other is the organization trying to engineer a culture and open people's minds. And of course, Google is a really good example, but if you leave developers, and I'm no offense to developers, but you know, if you leave certain work styles to their own devices, they're going to double down on their traits and behaviors, which isn't necessarily good all the time. So Google, you know, is very famous for saying, if we left developers to their own devices, they would basically build little caves for themselves and, you know, like stock up on food and treats and never leave their desk. But we need them to meet each other and collide, because those collisions create new conversations and ideas transfer, and we have more social capital and we have more sharing, and ultimately new and better ideas out of those conversations. And Steve Jobs is known for doing that at Pixar as well, with the one main intersection in their space, the main lounge space. Google does it with micro kitchens being no further than 150 feet from their employee desk. So that basically like bringing the squirrels to the nuts. And I think there is something to be said for that idea of, we want to support people in what they need, but we also want to nudge them into positive behaviors that may feel uncomfortable, but ultimately we think are good for the work culture, or, you know, for their own careers and for idea mingling. So I think it's really important to make sure that people understand the tension between those two opposing ideas. And then that's sort of like a good segue into change management, because change management is a very terrible word for what people are trying to do within an organization when they present a new idea. I think it's better to think of change and helping an organization adopt change as a mindset. And so it's not an event, it's an everyday practice, and it's a skill to build. And so preparing people for change shouldn't be the sort of like one-time occurrence, but it's like, we are ready for change and we are resilient and we are in tune with ourselves for any change that's coming. And I think a lot about Carol Dweck's work. She's a Stanford psychologist and she wrote the book Mindset, The New Psychology for Success. And so she's the one that talks about the fixed mindset versus a growth mindset. If you take that idea into workplace, the fixed mindset is the person that says, I like what I like. I don't understand why you're trying to change or make me do anything differently. This is who I am. And the growth mindset in workplace change would say, okay, I'm not totally understanding what you're offering in this, and you know, you took away my office and you're giving me a desk, but I'm willing to try a new way of working to find the lesson or the inspiration and what
you know, this new concept, and I'm in tune with myself and I understand the need for a change or the, you know, for the greater good. So I think there's like, it's really good to get people try to position the culture into a growth mindset before you even introduce a change. The ways I think about doing that are change should not be a surprise to you. You should be a part of the change that's happening. So a lot of emphasis on co-creation. When you're doing research, involve as many end users as possible, communicate to them that they're influential on new ideas and practices, and then circle back with them on how what they said is either being implemented or not. Coaching with leaders and influencers to make, you know, the traditional word is change champions. I think we can probably just leverage the idea of influencers. It can be anyone in the organization. So it can be the admin in accounting, turns out is like super influential, and identifying that person and helping them become an advocate for change. And then the communication campaign, of course, is kind of the, you know, how are you telling people what's going on? How do you continue to do that over time? And I think a lot of it, the traditional way of communication campaign is we have this roadshow, we have this deck, we have a website and a video to watch. I think the more transformational way of thinking about it is the space speaks to you and you speak back. So what is the space asking you in an ongoing way, and how do you tell the space what you like or don't like? So it can be, you know, in situ survey on iPads. It could be a Slack channel where you say something's broken. It could be facility ticketing. It could be talking to a community manager. And that's my last one, which is something that I'm super fond of, is the space needs a champion. It needs a cruise director. It needs someone to curate the experience and also listen on behalf of the user and the space and be that crossroads and say, okay, I hear what you're saying. I'm going to go do something about it. But also on a daily basis, tell people, you know, we're trying this thing out. This thing changed. This is happening. So it doesn't feel like something's being pushed upon you, but you basically have a curator who's always there to tell you what's going on. If we could take the word management out of that term, it would be maybe, or just call it change, you know, transformation in the workplace, or just sort of help people understand that the workplace is not static. It's always dynamic. And so you should always expect new ideas and new concepts and new initiatives to be rolling out. You'd get people out of the kind of scarcity mindset where this is mine, there's only so much of it and I need to hold on to it, and an idea of abundance. Like, I'm going to be okay. My company really trusts, or I trust my company is doing the best for me. And if there's a need I have, I'll just tell the space or I'll tell the community team I'm missing this and something, you know, they'll take care of it for me.
That's actually the point. The workspace is not something that's finished at some point in time. It's not a project that you put to an infinite end and then you never revisit that concept again, but it should be a perpetual feedback process in place somehow, and then change is happening. I mean, again, you can't change everything all the time, but based on feedback that pops up, you should be able to implement that also then going forward in the next projects on other locations probably as well. Which brings me to asking, what should be the measures of success of a workplace model?
Yeah, I think in workplace itself, who shows up? So do people like it? Do they show up? When they show up, where do they go? What spaces do they use? How long do they stay in a space? So dwell time. The activities they're doing, so like activity recognition, and this idea of like how adventurous are they in the space, or are they staying within their team and building those connections within the team, or are they bridging across teams? So I think people are really interested in when people come, how are they working with our teams, how are they building relationships and trying to quantify that. And then I think marrying that, you know, just the idea of like supply and demand, are people showing up? Do they like what we have? Do we have too much of it? Is the sentiment. So we want to watch we want to measure what people are doing, but we also still want to hear what people are saying. And so the sentiment of the user, their satisfaction, their priorities, and their preferences. So backing that up with qualitative feedback and discovery of, yes, I have to go to the bathroom, but I don't like it. Right, I have to go to the restroom, but could it be better?
The money boils down pretty much to human-centric KPIs. It's not how many square meters per person and these kind of things.
No, because again, I think I'm just really, right now I'm really focused on unassigned work environments. I think that's going to be the future for a lot of people are going to try that out. And I think there's just going to be just a separation between we have space, how many people can we load into it in a satisfactory way, which is different than we have space, how many people can we assign to a desk before we run out of space? And so you just want to know, in the first of those, we have space, how many people can we load in? Are they coming? What do they use? And are they happy?
Yeah, makes sense. And then looking into this future of the workplace, if you could magically solve any real estate problem, what would it be?
Yeah, I think there's two. One is equity in the workplace. And this has nothing to do with the pandemic. I feel like, and back to your question about, you know, where do we get stuck? What's the biggest challenge to overcome is we have these big ideas about the workplace, and then a specific group or a leader kind of demands a specific need that is, from where I sit, is someone executing a power play. And it has nothing to do with what's good for the greater culture of the workplace. It really is a play of seniority or tenure or special exception. And I wish that could go away. It drags a lot of innovation down because we're focusing on the needs of a few versus the benefits of everyone. And the second is really back to that idea of the quantified workplace. So what is and I do believe there are products and ideas and solutions that will come out of this pandemic, and people will realize there's so many different ways that we need to pull vendors and tools and platforms together in order to understand what's going on. Can we have an out-of-the-box solution that quantifies and qualifies workplace performance in a holistic way? That is sort of a beautiful dashboard where we can see what's going on and we can make a decision about tuning the system based on the insights we're seeing. So I think it's kind of like we do this a lot with fitness. You know, a lot of us wear, you know, apps on our wrists or are part of fitness programs that tell us what are our behaviors and how to modify them to be better. And I think if we could have a fitness app for the workplace and the workplace experience that helps the user understand what they're doing and how they best perform and how that relates to space or the technology they use, or the way they interact with people, it could be a really cool thing. So it flips the script of, it's not a small amount of real estate professionals making decision on behalf of everyone, but users are kind of more in tune with their work behavior and making better decisions about where, when, and why to work one place or another. Because now the world is not just like workplace and everything else. It's a whole ecosystem that we really should understand. And I think the user is at the center now of understanding all of those decisions, and a platform that could help tell the corporate real estate, here's what's actually going on from home all the way to the corporate campus, preferences and behaviors and performance, that we would, I think we'd have a lot less dead office space, a lot more satisfied workplace people.
Yeah, and a lot more informed decision-making.
There's so many different products that spit out annual reports about, you know, a friend was shared their to-do list, their annual report for their own to-do list. Like, this is Tuesday was your most productive day for completing tasks. And on average, you do these many tasks per week. And I just thought if we could have that for a user at a workplace scale, somehow saying you're most productive when you're in a huddle room, you often meet with these people and then finish your report. You know, something about that kind of like the work you're doing and the space you use and the tools you use, that connection, I think it would just be really insightful and beneficial to the end user versus keeping all the information in the hands of just the corporate real estate teams.
A lot of it happens unconsciously, I'm believing, the choice that you make. So it would make sense to do that. So final question from my end, who else should I talk to on this podcast?
I thought back to this idea of we are talking about corporate real estate with corporate real estate professionals, and it's a very niche world and a lot of like-minded people, peers talking to each other. But what would be really interesting, and it's more broad, is to actually find employees who've experienced big transformational change at work and interview them. So what is it like to receive all this stuff that we talk about and get the employee, the voice of the employee, the voice of the customer, and just hear it from that daily user? I think that could be really interesting. You'd have to find, again, someone with a growth mindset about it. But I just think it would be really healthy. It's always really healthy to talk to the people that live through our decisions.
I love this idea. So if any of our listeners identifies with this description, reach out to me. I'd love to have that conversation. And I really enjoyed our conversation as well, Liz. Thank you very much for sharing your insights and ideas in this podcast.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of The Workplace Leader, there's more. Go visit our blog and have a look at some of the other topics we have covered. Currently, you can download your own decision-making canvas, for example. Or tune into our next episode of The Workplace Leader.